This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support for this program. We're rebounding from another treacherous hurricane, Hurricane Zeta, the 27th of the season, the 7th to hit Louisiana, lashed the Louisiana coast last night and got into Metro New Orleans. And we'll talk about that as we move along today on WRKF. But as we have said a few times this year, it could have been worse, as bad as it was, and we'll be picking up the pieces and sorting through the debris and finding out exactly what we're dealing with in the hours and days to come. And at this time, which is one of the most fascinating times in our country's history and in our state's history, with a pandemic, hurricanes, wildfires, and an election, and unrest in our streets, we certainly look for success stories. And we're about to visit with Richard Zuschlag, who is one of the great Louisiana success stories. His company is about to celebrate its 50th anniversary, Acadian Ambulance. Before we talk to Richard, I would like to implore those of you who have not contributed, some maybe not in 40 years, some maybe not in 40 days or 40 months, if you have the opportunity and the inclination, we'd like to hear from you at 855-893-9753. And this is the seventh day of the Fall Member Fest, I think actually the eighth day now. So bonus WRKF Pelican face masks are available for pledges of just $5 a month or more. That's just $60 a year or more. And if you can give more, we would appreciate it. And you'll get that exceptional Pelican face mask at $5 a month per month. So please give us a call if you are able to, 855-893-9753. And as mentioned, we are joined by Richard Zuschlag, who is the president of Acadian Ambulance, a company founded in 1971, Lafayette, Louisiana. Headquartered there, Acadian Ambulance maintains a fleet of more than 400 ground ambulances, 8 medical transport helicopters, 5 fixed-wing aircraft that provide transport to medical facilities. It is one of the big entities and one of the success stories, and I can speak from personal experience. An Acadian helicopter saved my life after a car wreck in 2004. And Richard Zuschlag, we had you on last year. You were one of the most talked-about guests of 2019. Your thoughts about how your company is operating in this wildly crazy time with a pandemic, hurricanes, and all kinds of obstacles that we usually don't have to deal with, at least to this degree. How's it going?
Well, to be very truthful, we're all worn out and tired. I'm grateful for our staff. I have an unbelievable group of people that work really well together, but this year, starting 6-7 months ago with the pandemic, has been the most unusual year that I have been operating Acadian in the last 49 years. And to tell you the truth, from myself all the way down to the janitor, we are really worn out, but we're still functioning. This last hurricane was not as bad in terms of transports of evacuating people from nursing homes and hospitals, but we do have a lot of damage, and I think people are going to be shocked to see the damage from buildings and trees and the outage of power. You know, we're told, I think I had somewhere around 25 stations across the Southern Province station without power or internet right now, that we may be a week to 10 days before they're able to get the power back up, because it was did a lot more damage than I think that people realize right now. And our concern would be some of those healthcare facilities we serve operating on generators. When they go for 2 or 3 days like that, oftentimes you'll have some old generators that kick out, and we may get called into action to have to evacuate some of the nursing homes or some of the smaller hospitals.
877-217-5757 is our Talk Louisiana number, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Richard Zuschlag is with us for our first segment, CEO and Chairman of the Board of Acadian Ambulance. Next year will be 50 years for this remarkable entity in our state. And a listener, this is Hal in Monroe calling in or listening online, saying that things are different, of course, with the pandemic. You have to protect your people. How do you do that in this time?
It is very difficult, but I've got a great medical director, Dr. Chuck Purnell, and he has taken great effort to make sure that our employees were protected properly. In those first few weeks when there was no mask available, no matter what we did, we would try to borrow some or buy some from hospitals. There was such a shortage. It was really a crisis for some 30 to 45 days. Dr. Burnell came up with the most unusual thought. He found out that these $25 to $30 paint masks that people use when they're painting, that you can buy at these hardware stores or paint stores, were really super efficient in blocking the COVID disease from getting into the body. It made us look like an astronaut, but he gave out his credit card to 100 of our top supervisors across two states and purchased 2,600 of those masks in a period of 3 days. And I can tell you, it made a huge difference in us not having our people get sick. Now, yes, we did have some get the disease, but we had a lot less numbers than other pre-hospital EMS systems across the country. So I was very, very proud of what he did to accomplish that. And I was thinking outside the box. But I will tell you this, after a couple of months, when we tried to convince our people to be careful where they went, we have a lot of young people working for us. We have maybe 110 people that work the communication dispatch center here in Lafayette. And much to my sadness, about 45 of those people, because of going out on the weekends after the first couple of months and they've relaxed the restrictions, caught the COVID disease. We had more people in the office catch it than we did out in the field. And that's because our people were not being responsible to watch out for their family and their company by going out to the bars and et cetera on the weekend. So that was a pretty big stress factor. I'm glad that we had a dispatch communication center in both Austin and Beaumont that picked up some of that slack. For a while, I was concerned that we weren't going to be able to operate.
Now, Richard, you mentioned you're in other states. Of course, you're all over the state of Louisiana, but how expansive is the operation now for your company?
We're basically primarily in Louisiana and Texas. We are in one county over in Mississippi and one county up in Memphis, Tennessee. But we have our safety management systems, which provide services to the oil and gas fields and to all this fracking going on in the country. And they're probably in 25 or 30 states across the country. And then we have the alarm system, ATS, and I think they're in probably 45 of the 50 states right now. And we answer all those calls back here in Lafayette.
You're a good friend of the governor of Louisiana. Recently, Richard was appointed to the LSU Board of Supervisors. How did that friendship come about?
You know, it came about when he was first elected. I was not supportive of him in the first round. I was very close to Scott Angel, who was a friend of mine in Brobridge, and I was very supportive of him. And I can still remember Governor Evans coming to my office and wanting me to write out a check for him, and I didn't want to do it because I was supporting Rangel, but he told me that I needed to buy some insurance. He pushed me pretty hard, and so I wrote him a $1,000 check.
All right.
And of course, Scott lost, and Edwards was in the runoff, and so he came back to see me. And I have to tell you something. I'm so proud of him. I think that man has worked so hard for this state to try to bring as many people together as he can. He's a devout Catholic Christian. I admire him and his family, and he's a genuine person. He likes to build continuity and bring people together. And I like working with him, and I know that there are some things that are controversial, but in his heart and mind, he has the best interests of the people of the state. And I would have to say, I've worked with a lot of governors in the last 50 years. He's one of the most honest, sincere ones that I can remember.
Nick in Lake Charles. Nick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Richard Zuschlag. Hi, Nick.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I would just like to first thank Acadian from Lake Charles for the investment that you all have made in our city with your new facility that you're doing over there. And I'd like to hear a little bit about some of the challenges that you're not only facing with COVID, but also with operating in areas like Lake Charles that were so heavily hit by Hurricane Laura and Hurricane Delta, and then, you know, continuing to build that facility and operate in that city.
Well, let me just say that I just feel terrible for the people of Lake Charles to be hit twice like they have been. You know, my people told me for a week that Lake Charles was devastated. And you hear things, you see pictures. But about the second week, I made a personal appearance, and I was in shock. The people of Lake Charles have a lot of work to do to rebuild. And I think that the governor or somebody is going to have to get a task force together to see how we can come together as a state to help Lake Charles, because I've been visiting with the mayor over there. And so they have so much devastation that people came in and covered it for two or three days, then they left and got back into politics and the COVID disease and kind of have forgotten about Lake Charles. But that first Hurricane Laura just wiped the place out with wind, and the second one came back in and flooded the whole place, Delta. So they've been hit twice this year. It's unfortunate. I measure the economy in an area by how many 911 calls we have, and ever since those two storms came through, we're down 50% in Lake Charles.
All right, we're going to spend a few more minutes with Richard Zuschlag, CEO of Acadian Ambulance, and we'll be back after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. On deck is Evan Osnos, National Book Award winner, who's written a compelling biography about one of the most talked about people in the world right now, Joseph R. Biden Jr., who 5 nights from now may very well be President-elect Joe Biden. But before we get there, we're wrapping it up with Richard Zuschlag, CEO of Acadian Ambulance. Next year will be the 50th anniversary. I'm sure there'll be quite a celebration for this remarkable Louisiana company. But recently, Richard, you were appointed to the LSU Board of Supervisors, and more than a few folks have commented about the search for a new president chancellor, and the guy who has the position on an interim basis, Tom Galligan's interested. What's your thinking about where the university is in finding a full-time president and chancellor?
Well, I think we have a great group of supervisors who really care about this university, our flagship university, LSU. I'll be very truthful. It's a much more complex organization. What I ever realized, I've only been there now for 4 months and attended four of my meetings. I'm just impressed with the entire staff of LSU, and there's a lot of controversy about virtual training and in-person training, and I know that the university is working real hard to come up with a compromise on that. I see a lot of things on social media where students and parents are saying, well, look, if we're going to do virtual training, could we do it live so that those students that are properly protected with masks could go into class, and those that didn't feel comfortable could do it from home, and that might be one of the things that would work out. In terms of the leadership, you know, there's a number of individuals that feel they need two leaders, a chancellor and a president that looks over the whole state, and then one that just looks over the university in Baton Rouge. We're in difficult financial times. I think maybe one of the reasons the governor changed his mind on two people versus one is for finances. We're going to have a difficult time raising money right now with the condition the state's in. The other thing is Tom Gallagher has really showed us that one person can do it if they have the right talents. If they got the right communications and they're efficient in dealing with their people, one person makes things a lot simpler in my mind, and maybe that's because of the example he's setting. I'm not familiar with the other administrations where they had two different people running different parts of the university, and I think from what I've heard from the chancellors out in the Eunice and Alexandria in New Orleans Health and Shreveport, that there was some confusion when there was two people involved, and when you have one that's organized and cares about everybody, it seems to me to be going a lot smoother right now.
Well, Richard Zuschlag, we'll be calling again soon. Congrats on your success and for your service to our state. Appreciate you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jim.
See you soon. We're joined now by Evan Osnos, National Book Award winner, Harvard cum laude, 1998, native of London, and biographer, also a prolific writer for The New Yorker, but biographer of Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., the man who is now favored by a handsome margin to be the next president of the United States of America. Good morning to you, Evan.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be with you.
Nice to talk with you. Well, Biden's a guy, as we know, has been around close to a half century on the political scene. When you're a U.S. senator, you become a national figure, and it didn't take him long to get right at the top of the class when it became when it came to the most well-known senators. But what about him did you find most compelling in your book?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I think a lot of people might wonder, is there really anything we don't know about Joe Biden after we've been seeing him on television and hearing him talk for half a century? And the honest answer is, I think if you took any of us, you or me, and you said, well, all right, what are the five bullet points that we might know about this person's life? The truth is that you or I would also know that that really doesn't capture us, actually. I mean, it doesn't capture what makes us tick. What are the kind of moments in our biography that may not be the headline moments, but actually reflect who we are as people, how we make decisions, what drives us, what's our character like? Those were the questions that I was looking to answer. And I ended up finding them in some really interesting moments that we don't often hear about. I'll give you one example. Way back in 1972, when Biden was running for the Senate for the first time, we forget sometimes he was, you know, the young guy on the scene. He was 29 years old, and he's running against this real giant of Delaware politics, Cale Boggs, who'd held every major office in the state, World War II vet. And they're on the debate stage, and there's a moment when Cale Boggs missed a fact. He didn't know it. It was an obscure detail of foreign affairs. And Biden actually happened to know it, but the moderator turns to Biden and gives him a chance to answer the question after Boggs couldn't. And Biden, you know, he's given him a chance basically to run his sword through his opponent. And Biden didn't do it. He held back. And he said later, he said, look, I sensed that the people of Delaware did not want to see Cale Boggs humiliated on that stage. That was not necessary. And he didn't have to do it. And I think there's something important in there about his conception of politics as something other than blood sport. It doesn't have to be the way it is today. And I think that's a meaningful fact that we don't often hear about him.
Of course, that was almost a half century ago, and times have changed some, as we know. But he is a man who has had tragedy in his life. Most Americans know about his son, Beau, dying with a brain tumor. But may be unaware that Joe Biden at one point in his life had a brain aneurysm. And in 1972, he lost his wife and his infant daughter in a car accident. How has he responded to these challenges in his life?
Well, in both cases, they were the kinds of events in anyone's life that, frankly, would knock us flat. I mean, I think in the case of his late wife and his daughter dying in the car accident, you know, at the time, the truth is Joe Biden considered suicide. He didn't imagine that he could ever go into the Senate having experienced this. And his sister Valerie actually was the one who told me about that period in which she said to him, look, Joe, you have two sons. They're 2 and 3 years old, and you don't have the option of giving up. You have to carry on for them. You have to be a father to them. You have to be an inspiration to them. And, of course, Joe Biden sort of embraced that. And he was sworn in beside his son's hospital bed. And, of course, he went off to the Senate. But I think, you know, one of the reasons why we know him as Amtrak Joe and this kind of – it's a bit of a cliche about him riding the train home every night. But the thing we forget is the reason he was riding the train home every night is because he was a single father raising two boys. And – There's meaning in that. I think there is this theme that runs through his life that we see today, which is this resilience. The guy just would get himself up off the mat. I mean, in the case of his aneurysms in 1988, he literally found himself on the floor of a hotel room and he couldn't move his legs. And he doesn't know exactly how he got there because he'd suffered this really dramatic brain injury. He recovered fully. It took him 7 months to get back to the Senate. Went through an extraordinary surgery and rebounded. But the ability to bounce back turns out to be as core to his political persona and his personal persona as you can get. And I think there's a metaphor in there to some degree for us as a country now as we're sort of reeling with our own crises.
The book from Evan Osnos is Joe Biden, The Life, The Run, and What Matters Now. 877-217-5757. If you'd like to join our conversation, we will take a call or two for Evan before we part company. But the Vice President, Biden, he does have an unusual way of expressing himself. And some people are of course, saying that this is a sign of some senility, and others are saying this is just Joe. He's always been different in the way he talks. He was a stutterer. What is your take on these, what some would view as cheap shots about whether he has dementia or that sort of thing?
Well, as we know, that's been one of the Trump campaign's favorite lines. Just as a pure political matter, it's a way of deflecting attention from some of the things that the president has said that have caused him trouble, like suggesting that we inject bleach into our bodies to address the COVID epidemic. I think the truth is, if you're tuning into Joe Biden now in 2020, it's easy not to know the history here, including the fact that 20 years ago, people were saying, gosh, Joe Biden says things sometimes that don't seem to be planned. They don't seem to be in his best interest. They certainly weren't on the page of the speech he was reading. That's the nature of who he is. He's been that way for a long time. Part of that is because he battled a stutter as a child. Really an extraordinary impediment. His nickname in school was Joe Impedimenta because he couldn't get the words out. And he broke the back of that thing by reciting things like the Declaration of Independence and, you know, Irish poetry in the mirror, and went on to become the junior class president of his high school. There is a story there.
Okay, we're going to hear more of the story from Evan Osnos after this pause for the news.